One day, a man went for a walk to raise some money for the NHS.
One little soul like me isn't going to make much difference.
100 lengths of his garden later, and Captain Tom Moore had raised tens of millions of pounds and become a global inspiration.
Hi, Tom. Ben Stokes here. What you've managed to achieve is absolutely fantastic.
You inspired me.
I just wanted to send a huge congratulations.
If we as a country can show the same spirit of optimism shown by Captain Tom Moore, we will beat it.
How have you been handling the attention? Because the attention has been incredible.
I must say, I rather enjoyed it.
An array of honours culminated with Her Majesty the Queen coming out of lockdown to especially award Captain Tom a knighthood. And now, for the first time, Captain Sir Tom will delve into a century of memories.
We'll tell some of the secrets. Not all of them.
He'll tell his very personal history of Britain and the moments that made him the man he is today.
I was left with no job, no qualifications. Sex and miniskirts all seemed to go together. The person I married had gone.
This is the story of a national hero who was 100 years in the making.
Right, I'm ready when you are.
The Life and Times of Captain Sir Tom. A bird's eye view flying over green fields towards a town.
Tom Moore's hometown is Keighley in West Yorkshire.
I was born on the 30th of April 1920, but I don't think my life starts there. It starts before that.
Old footage of daily life at the start of the 20th century.
I think you've got to go back to my grandfather.
A photo of him.
The original Tom Moore, who could never read or write. He must have been up in the Dales doing an awful lot of dry stone walling.
But Thomas Moore was a Yorkshireman with ambition.
He started up a building company in Keighley. He progressed very well, considering that he had very little schooling. He was a very determined man.
Dominic Sandbrook, historian.
I mean, don't forget, in the world that Captain Tom was born into, the vast majority of people never went to university and never dreamed of going to university. So if you wanted to progress, you had to do so by your own kind of practical efforts. You know, the 20s and 30s were a great age of building. This was a great age of the suburbs. You're building houses for all these people who've come home from the First World War. So the demand for master builders was great. There's a lot of money to be made.
A building site.
Tom's grandfather learned the engineering techniques necessary to become a master builder. He constructed houses all around Keighley.
We built a lot of houses up here.
Including a large home for his own family called Club Nook, which still stands today. But this wasn't the crowning achievement of the man with no formal education.
In fact, the war memorial in the centre of the town was built by my grandfather.
A photo of its construction.
This was one of the first war memorials in Britain, opened in 1924 to a packed-out crowd. It wasn't the only thing to admire about old Thomas Moore.
I think people liked him. In his own way, he believed in women's rights. Some of the men, if they got the money, they went straight to the pub, and the poor wives had little to manage with. But my grandfather insisted they got some money in their hand.
Often women had no economic power at all. They didn't have a bank account. They didn't have their own separate savings. They didn't even exist as an independent financial entity. To be insisting that the women, that the wives, get some of that money is very enlightened, actually, by the standards of the day.
A photo of the Moore family.
Captain Tom's father, Wilfred, also worked in the family building business.
I couldn't have had a nicer father than he was, although there was a big drawback that he and I could never have long conversations together because my father was extremely deaf. It was always very difficult for him.
The one thing Tom could enjoy with his deaf father was a trip to the silent movies.
And that was the Picture House, which was the premier cinema of the town. Remember that well.
A photo of the cinema.
It's an extraordinary thing that we've lost sight of, actually, just how important cinemas were to people. Picture palaces. Of course, people didn't have TVs. The cinema was a glimpse of another universe, steeped in glamour and stardust and excitement and so on. And cinema attendances in Britain are enormous between the wars. You can't overestimate, actually, the importance of the Picture Palace in kind of forming the culture of the day.
Of course, in black and white, and the other ones, there was no sound. There was maybe somebody playing a piano. And we used to watch things like Cowboy Ones. At that time, it was a series. Every week you had to go. I've always liked Westerns because the good ones always win.
A bottle with Tom's portrait on.
Tom's personality isn't just a product of his father's side of the family.
That's my mother here on the right. My mother was the headmistress of a little village school. My mother and father, I'm not being unkind, but my mother was the brighter of the two.
Old black and white footage of children playing. They tip over a handcart full of bricks.
A very happy childhood. I wasn't brought teddy bears or anything. I was brought things that were practical, that were useful as you grew older. My father would bring me presents of a piece of wood and some nails and a hammer, or a bigger hammer. I'm quite right too.
Tom raised his own daughters, Lucy and Hannah, with whom he now lives, in exactly the same way.
For your birthday, you'd get a set of tools.
Yeah, I remember.
I mean, that's why you have a very good tool set now.
I do, yeah. But I remember you making me go under the car to change the oil.
A bottle of vodka with a knitted Captain Tom on the top of it.
Nobody encouraged Tom's practical skills more than his father's brother, perhaps the most influential character of his entire childhood.
Tom looks at a photo of him.
Yes, that's Uncle Billy.
Billy Moore was part of a group of daredevil Yorkshiremen and women who were the pioneers of extreme sports.
The photo shows Billy sitting on a motorcycle.
Whether it was biplanes or motorcycles, the tougher the challenge, the bigger the thrill.
Wing walkers hang from a plane in flight.
Motorbikes were Britain's most popular form of working-class transport. Between the wars, there were 300 different manufacturers, and Uncle Billy rode Scots, made in Yorkshire. His antics often made the local press.
Such was Billy's riding ability that one of his favourite tricks was to ride across the local canal on a plank only 6 inches wide. He was also seen riding through town whilst reading a newspaper, seemingly with perfect control of the machine. He did that for effect. Yeah, true.
The ultimate test was the Scott Trial, a timed event held over Yorkshire's harshest terrain.
I've got something to show you. This is about motorcycles.
Grandson Benji shares some original footage of the event.
This is a Scott Trial, yes.
Young Tom learnt that what most called a severe challenge, others considered entertainment.
These fellows say they do it for fun. I wouldn't do it for £1,000.
90-year-old memories that are still fresh.
I remember most of these places. And that's at Parker Ashley, outside Kettlewell.
Crowds watch the bikes.
Competitions like this attracted huge crowds. Uncle Billy excelled.
He was very skilled. He was a wizard.
He won so many times that a Billy Moore Cup is still awarded today to the best-placed Yorkshireman on the Scott trial.
Billy and his bike on a hillside.
Tom's uncle was a local hero.
Tom stands in his kitchen.
They were very fond of me. I mean, we got on extremely well.
My father named his dogs after Billy, and he was an incredibly important person in his life.
As a boy, I spent a lot of time with him.
It wasn't long before Tom wanted a piece of the action himself.
My first motorcycle I found in a barn, and I bought for half a crown. The tyres were flat, it was covered in dust and didn't run. Now, I was 12, and not boasting, but I'd been brought up with motorbikes, and on my own, without anybody's help, I got it run and ran it in the field. Nobody came to give me help. They just assumed they'd do it, and they did it.
We all know how it feels when you first drive and you think, oh, my, I have freedom, I'm independent. He got that at 12.
His daughter, Hannah.
With his dog, Billy, he was able to roam the moors and be who he wanted to be.
If ever my father was talking about his motorcycle years, he would light up. He absolutely loved being on a motorcycle.
But the happy childhood that had taught Tom about hard work, fairness, practical skill and independence was about to deliver heartbreaking family tragedy.
Very, very sad.
The life and times of Captain Sir Tom. The life and times of Captain Sir Tom, 100 and fabulous.
Captain Tom Moore's charity walk took place during three whirlwind weeks in April. 4 months later, and the family are still dealing with all the gifts that were sent.
So this is George, and that's Dave.
Hello.
And they've been coming every week to take all the recycling away.
Well done. Thank you very
much. Thank you ever
so
much.
Nice to meet you.
OK.
Thank you.
See you on Friday.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.
It's quite interesting. Things happening around me are different, but inside here, nothing's changed. I'm still the same Tom Moore as I was.
An advertisement for a motorbike.
That's a Tom Moore who was born and bred in the Yorkshire Dales. Behind each of these century-old photographs of his hometown, Keighley, lies another treasured memory waiting to be unlocked.
It brings me back. I think this is really interesting because one of the presents that my father gave me was a half plate camera. There's a doorway there with steps which lead up there, and that was held by the Keighley Photographic Association. I was a member and used to go up there to develop films.
Not that this thoroughly modern man believes everything was better in the good old days.
He pulls out his phone.
What's the point of telling when you got one of those? And this will do all that any of that would do 10 times over.
The Keighley Photographic Association searched their archives for any photos Tom may have taken. They found none. But they did find an old shoebox full of prints, labelled Wilfred Moore, Tom's father, which Tom is now seeing for the very first time.
That's my father's signature, all right.
It's an unintentional father's gift made in 1920.
You, I was born.
Delivered to his son 100 years later.
A group of men.
Yes, there. That's my father there. I don't think I've seen him looking as young as that.
He points him out in the group.
I'm interested to see my father there. That's my father. Very good. Marvellous.
Tom's father documented daily life in all its forms.
Funny potato.
A photo of an oddly shaped potato. A photo of a royal visit.
George V, King George V. and the Queen.
Tom flicks through the photos.
There's one subject in this remarkable time capsule that is inevitable. Motorcycles.
Because I've still got an accessory headlamp.
Tom's mechanically-minded family loved motorbikes and the competitions that took place across Yorkshire's unforgiving terrain. A young Tom idolised his Uncle Billy, one of the most famous riders.
A photo of Uncle Billy sitting in an open-top car.
Sadly, in 1935, this colourful character met a tragic end.
He was working on his car in the garage, and he stayed there too long, and the fumes got him.
Billy is smiling in the photo.
My father and I had to get him out of his car in his garage and carry him in the house. So at 15, I carried a dead Billy into his house. So, I mean, I have that recollection that not the happiest one.
Did you miss him when he was gone?
Yes, I did, yes. Very much so, yes. Very, very, very sad.
Tom gazes off into the distance and the screen fades to black. Removal men carry framed pictures of Captain Tom on his walk out of the house.
Aren't they good?
Captain Tom received 170 portraits as thank you gifts from members of the public.
Amazing.
That's good, because it's got all the medals on
there. Yes.
The paintings will be catalogued and displayed in an online gallery.
You name it, we've had it. From sweets, chocolates, pictures. Nearly all of them are perfect. They really are very good indeed. They're recognisable, and they, you know who it is. Yes, I think some of them are very good. I mean, that one goes back. That was when I was just being commissioned as a second lieutenant. I don't look like that now, but I did. I managed to get by with some of the girls all right.
Wartime footage of fighter pilots scrambling to their Hurricane planes and taking off. Anti-aircraft guns open fire.
War broke out in 1939, and Tom was conscripted into the Duke of Wellington's regiment at the age of 20. But he wasn't the only Moor to go to war.
No, I got a sister, Frieda, who was 2 years older than me. She was a plotter in Lincolnshire, plotting the German plane.
Tom's sister volunteered to help coordinate the RAF fighters that shot down German aircraft over Britain.
All squadrons are engaging.
A German plane goes down. Record War Savings Week.
Meanwhile, in Tom's hometown, more than £1 million was raised for the war effort, proving record-breaking fundraising is something of a tradition for people from Keighley.
The mayor waves to a crowd.
But by now, Tom was in a different world. He was posted 7,000 miles away to India and the multinational 14th Army, who fought in the brutal Burma campaign.
Troops use a Vickers machine gun and heavy artillery.
There he faced the savage Japanese army, as well as monsoon conditions, stifling heat and virulent tropical disease. It was one of World War II's harshest environments.
It was unpleasant. I was at the forefront with the Indian Army. We were under fire constantly.
The motorbike skills Tom learned in the Yorkshire Dales served him well when he was entrusted to deliver vital messages.
The only way of getting to the front from the tanks was on a motorcycle through several miles of jungle, which fell to me.
Tom was riding through a war zone riddled with hidden enemy soldiers.
I was only 21 or 22. You don't get very frightened at 22.
During a 3-year posting, he went on to train other dispatch riders in the regiment, which provided some welcome respite.
A rider stalls his bike on a steep hillside. a picture of Tom as a young man in army uniform.
Being an opportunist, when I ran this motorcycle course, I decided the passing out test, we would go to Bombay and have a night in Bombay and come home again. It so happened that Sylvia lived in Bombay. She was a pretty girl. She'd been brought up in India and kept running these courses, and I ensured that each course finished at the weekend. I knew the British boys would look after themselves. I looked after Sylvia. Yes. So that was quite a happy little thing. Sylvia was happy. The brigadier was happy. I was happy. Yeah, well, it went on very well.
Tom's captain's pips.
I enjoyed the army.
Medals.
Today, the honorary colonel is receiving his freshly restored medals, along with an important addition.
Without further ado,
thank you.
There we go.
Let's have a look.
The medals.
Look.
That's lovely.
Yes,
that
really
is. And if you look, there's another layer underneath as well.
Look at the miniatures.
Yes.
So we've added your knight's bachelor badge.
That's your knighthood badge.
That's super. Thank you very much.
Honours continue to be awarded, a level of recognition that makes the builder's son just a little emotional.
Yes, I mean, grandfather would have, he would have been quietly very pleased. I mean, and my father, he would have been delighted. And if he's still up there hearing it, he will be absolutely delighted. You know, of all the people in the family who would be pleased, that would be my father.
Tom wipes away a tear.
This attention is a far cry from the situation Tom found himself in 75 years ago. After the war, Tom was back in Yorkshire and searching for work.
Dominic Sandbrook.
Post-war Britain was a very grey and gloomy place. We had 5 or 6 years of austerity. Rationing gets worse after the war than it had been during the war. The country is hugely indebted, and I think there was a real sense of exhaustion.
I was left with no job, with no qualification that anybody wanted. So I got a job as a labourer in a quarry. And although I say it myself, I was the best labourer they'd ever had. Wasn't long before I was using explosives.
At a Keithley quarry, they're getting ready for the big blast.
Rocks are hurled into the air.
That wasn't the job I intended, John. I took a job selling books at people's doors.
A salesman rings a doorbell.
It was woman's own.
A woman opens the door.
Women's magazines are a kind of how-to guide for this sort of shiny new consumer society that Britain is building in the post-war years. You have door-to-door salesmen because you have a much more affluent society with hugely rising wages and living standards. And you have these housewives who decide what the family budget goes on, and basically you're going to their house to sort of confront them in their lair and to extract their money from them.
That's what you were doing. You had to con them. It was a soul-destroying job. They were too kind-hearted. I couldn't really bear to take money off these ladies.
Tom headed south to find his fortune and went back to the building trade.
And I started selling roofing materials for a company in Gravesend. You know, I was quite good at that. I was intent on going up.
He joined another building firm and was soon rewarded with more responsibility.
I was covering north of England and Northern Ireland.
Tom was in his 30s and in a vibrant new era heralded by the Queen's coronation of 1953. Britain, with its 25-year-old monarch, was modernising.
traffic on a British high street.
Britain in the 50s, a country that was being transformed by the car. Many more people had cars than they ever had them before. And, of course, the roads weren't made for cars. You know, they were made for horses and carts and so on. That's when you start to see the wholesale sort of redevelopment of a lot of town centres to make room for cars. But you also see the government realising they've got to do something about motorways. And you have the opening of the M1 in 1959.
Yes, I went on that, merely to see what it was like. There was very little traffic on it. You just have to drive flat out on there. I mean, foot down and just keep it there.
And which company car did Tom enjoy driving the most? A British icon, the Mini.
They were fantastic little cars. You could drive them flat out for as long as you like. You could quite easily lift a rear wheel going round corners.
A Mini hares round a bend.
I was only picked up for speeding twice, but I should have been picked up hundreds of times. I was constantly driving above speed because I was in a hurry. I was going somewhere.
A Mini races along a street.
Occasionally, I had to go to head office to have meetings. And it so happened there was rather a pretty young lady who was the office manager in Gravesend. All right.
Little did Tom know that this was a woman who was going to change his life forever.
The Life and Times of Captain Sir Tom. The Life and Times of Captain Sir Tom. Tom walks with the aid of a Zimmer frame.
Morning.
Morning. Did you sleep well?
Yes, thank you.
Good.
How are you?
Yes, very well, thank you. Morning, Benji.
Morning, Gabba.
Daily life for Captain Sir Tom is returning to normal. But he'll never get used to the fortune he raised for NHS charities.
It's an enormous sum of money, isn't it?
Tom gets his breakfast.
Can you imagine 40 million or whatever is in a big pile, what it would look like? Didn't come to me, unfortunately.
Dominic Sandbrook.
He seems to personify virtues that we think we've lost. With his wartime background and with his longevity and as a family man and all the rest of it, he became the kind of perfect avatar of what we would like to think that Britain could be.
Always have porridge for breakfast, always, without change.
He's like a sort of secular version of the Queen. We were in this time of great crisis and anxiety, and people looked to him and they said, you know, there's a kind of Britishness that reminds us that we will prevail and we'll come through this.
He knows it's licking time.
Tom feeds his dog.
Tom Moore, the building materials salesman, would find it all very hard to believe.
Men go to work.
Throughout the 50s and 60s, he worked long and hard.
If I had to do the extra mile, I did it. It was intent on making progress. You could see a bit more in your pocket.
He specialised in a cheap and versatile material, concrete.
I supplied the concrete block facing for the new flower market at Covent Garden. And I went out to help Barcelona Airport being built.
A plane taxis on the airport runway.
Business was looking up. But back in Britain, a helping hand was needed.
You've got a huge economic boom in Britain in the 50s and 60s, but you don't have enough labour. It's as simple as that. So there is a huge demand for unskilled, cheap labour. And the place that fulfils that demand is the Commonwealth. So the West Indies, India and Pakistan. And you have this huge influx, hundreds of thousands of people, and they go to areas where there's the work. So they go to London, they go to the West Midlands, so the engineering and so on, and they go to places like West Yorkshire, to the mills.
Tom was now a manager in Gravesend.
Having been to India, I was used to Indian. I was the first person in the town to employ a Pakistani, and there was resistance amongst the other workers against him to begin with. Eventually, they accepted him and he was all right, but initially, there was resistance.
I think that all immigrants into this country should be controlled.
Half of them are coming over here without jobs. Consequently, they're making it very hard for our own people to find jobs.
Britain was a society in which a lot of people had never seen a non-white person. You know, they'd been raised with an unthinking sense of superiority and a whole set of attitudes that now would seem quite shocking. And so I think particularly when the economy starts to stutter and people are looking for scapegoats, then the new immigrant population sort of becomes a target.
The West Indians, they were super workers. They worked and they worked and they worked. They all worked hard.
If we, the coloured people, can meet the English people on their own level in discussion, in relationship, I think the harmony will be better. Personally, I think so.
An Asian woman walks across a street of terraced houses. The screen fades to black, then fades up on the Fab Four.
The cultural revolution that Tom witnessed in 60s Britain took many forms.
Well, she loves you.
The youngsters were having a swing time. Anything happened, anything went. Sex and miniskirts all seemed to go together.
So the common view of the 60s is that this is this age of tremendous change. It's Carnaby Street, it's James Bond and the Beatles and all the rest of it. And there is an element of truth in that. But, of course, for most people, the 60s didn't really swing at all.
Girls in miniskirts.
I mean, free love was OK, fine.
Did you manage to partake in free love in the 60s?
No, I was far too busy.
The 60s was an era for most people of kind of Bingo, Blackpool and Bernie Inns. You know, did the 60s arrive in Hull? They did, in 1987.
The Fab Four take a bow.
By 1968, 48-year-old Tom was a successful businessman working in London. But there was still something missing. His mind went back to Pamela, the office manager he'd once encountered.
I thought, that's a good idea, that one. And I got more and more attached to this young lady in the office management.
A wedding photo.
The relationship blossomed, and eventually I married her. No going down on one knee or anything fancy like that. She was 15 years younger than me. Her family generally weren't very happy about it. You don't have Yorkshiremen in Southern again. They're animals. They don't speak proper, so... But we got on very well. Mamie, she thought, anything's better than nothing.
In short order, Tom and Pamela started a family.
We just got married in time. Close enough people hadn't done the sums properly, so they hadn't worked it out. Otherwise, there were some who disapproved. But what did I care? Nothing.
A year later, man was on the moon. The spirit of exploration pervaded Britain's and Tom's family life.
For our summer holiday, he would go into planning weeks before. We drove to Italy, and we drove to France, and we drove to Spain.
So real early memories, right, of being exposed to other languages and other cultures. It was high adventure, always.
They were both on their torso, do practical things, changing light bulbs, hammers and nails, as I was. No, they were brought up to be practical. And they are, both of them.
We learnt to drive forklifts.
Navigation was his absolute thing. So I've been brought up with navigation and maps, always trying to give us skills.
It was all part of a plan. Realizing he was much older than the average dad, Tom was equipping his daughters for the future.
His goal was, by the time we were 15 or 16, that if he wasn't around, we were ready to take on the world. And I think it worked, because I did feel like that.
Meanwhile, Tom was making more strides in the business world. In 1983, now working for a Cambridge concrete company, he led a management buyout, raising the equivalent of £1 million in today's money, and saving jobs at one of the area's biggest employers.
He saved it. Extraordinary. I remember him with all the spreadsheets on the table, and they were laid out end to end whilst he was working it all out.
Within a few years, the company had been revitalized, and Tom sold out just before the financial crash of 1987.
And came out of there quite well off.
Tom, now 67, and his wife Pamela moved to the Costa del Sol, part of a mass migration to Spain by Brits seeking warmer weather. He was looking forward to a tranquil retirement with the girl of his dreams. But it was not to be. Pamela fell seriously ill, and they had to return home.
Pamela is showing signs of not being very well mentally.
A photo of Pamela.
It was a degenerative brain disorder. Some of her behaviour changed.
It was very obvious that she was deteriorating. You know, within a year she was in hospital because he couldn't cope with her at home. She really had deteriorated very badly.
Daughters Hannah and Lucy.
Totally tragic. It was a real moment in life to have that moment with your father, to realise that his wife, my mother, was never going to come back.
He visited her every day for 5 years in where she was. Every single day he went without fail to see her.
I had a contract, hadn't I? Sickness and health, I saw in the contract.
It's the most horrific thing to watch. And you go through loss every day because you know every day they're going away a little bit further.
When she actually died, it was a happy release for all of us. I mean, I didn't spend years mourning about her because the person I married had gone a long time before.
He looks emotional.
What can you do? You either become a victim or you charge forward, and that's what we did.
He just got on with it.
You just got to get on with it and do it and see what happens.
And Tom's next chapter was perhaps the most extraordinary, but also one where he nearly died.
Did I think he would survive it, in all honesty? No, I don't think we did.
The Life and Times of Captain Sir Tom. The Life and Times of Captain Sir Tom.
No,
don't do that.
There's a lot of background. Okay. I don't know if you want to, if you can, move it to Hannah, you're right.
Lovely.
It's a bit grainy.
Another day, another virtual award ceremony.
All right. We're all set. I'm Hannah, by the way. Oh, now I can't hear her.
After his wife Pamela died in 2006, Tom moved in with his daughter Hannah and her family. He stayed very active, holidaying alone into his 90s, first by visiting India and then Nepal.
It's a marvellous country, looking over on the Himalayas.
As you marched, the world watched.
I had a flight in a fairly small plane and circled Mount Everest, you know, little peak amongst hundreds of other peaks.
So all your new friends in the Guild of Freemen.
I don't know whether it broadens your mind or not, but it didn't do you any harm.
Captain Sir Tom.
Captain Sir Tom.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed.
I don't think he's ever retired, has he, really? Let's be really honest. I think that life never stopped turning for him. We've got 6 acres here, and up until really recently, he by himself mowed it.
He's also been a very good cook. You know, he's the one that would get on and cook the Sunday lunch. Great Yorkshire pudding.
All from his grandmother's cookbook that is 119 years old, listing everything from sheep's tongue to lamb's brain in its ingredients.
The only thing that you didn't use of a pig was its squeak.
Tom parks his walking frame by the door.
But the active lifestyle came to an abrupt halt 18 months ago. Throughout his charity walk, Tom hid the fact that movement is painful, the result of a near-fatal accident.
I was in the kitchen, doing no harm to anybody. I was unloading the dishwasher. And somehow I got tangled up with my own feet and I fell down and hit my head against the dishwasher. I fell on this hip and fractured this hip, and that was really where the trouble started. So I was in hospital for quite some time.
Tom had broken ribs and punctured a lung. He couldn't breathe properly. The family prepared for the worst.
Lucy.
For a good few days, it was really touch and go, really touch and go.
Did I think he would survive it, in all honesty? No, I don't think we did.
It was very painful, yes, but I survived and came out all right.
An exercise machine.
By way of rehab, Tom bought himself a treadmill.
I bought that, yes. I didn't tell them what I was doing, I just went and got it. I don't walk about easily. It's still quite a problem. But maybe one day it will get better.
Two vintage motorcycles.
And things got a little better sooner than Tom thought. When the vintage motorcycle community heard Tom's lifelong passion was for motorbikes, they arranged a bike show in his back garden with examples of his favourite machines. And the best part, it was all a complete surprise. Tom was reunited with his darling bikes for the first time in 50 years.
Magnificent. You say I'm a motorcycle fanatic. Still a beautiful bike.
When you see the photographs of him on a motorcycle, he looked really happy.
Now, he couldn't have any water. You know where he could get some water? You're f***ing it. Yes, a great bike. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, because you've got a magnificent trio, really have. I'm absolutely thrilled to see these. And each one's only special in its way. Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed. Great honour.
And it didn't stop there. World champion Dougie Lampkin, born in the next village to Tom and a winner of the Billy Moore Cup, dedicated to Tom's beloved uncle, gave him his own personal display.
Morning, sir.
You're showing off now. Have you ever seen him on television? Do you go up things which are impossible?
A wheelie.
You don't realise how skillful it is till you try and do it.
Dougie kickstarts one of the vintage bikes.
Sounds lovely. Beautiful.
Tom nods.
It sounds like it's running on one cylinder.
There was one more contraption, even older than Tom.
What's next, then?
A sidecar combination.
This was the 100-year-old biker's chance to go for just one more ride.
That's another nice bike.
Tom's face lights up.
One funny way you can think of him is as a time traveller.
I bought that in Burma.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
About 1943.
He's come further than almost all of us. Somebody who's lived so long, what they often have that so many of us don't have is a sense of perspective.
Are we ready? It's a lovely thing. It really is a lovely thing.
You know, they've seen the wheel of fortune turn. Reputations rise and fall. Fads come and go. And I think as time goes on, you become a little bit more seasoned. Less dried, less hysterical.
Are we going a bit faster, you, are we?
A bit fast for me.
Yes.
You know, that's, I think, what the experience of years gives you.
In 1925, when I was five, I could never imagine things that are happening now.
That was absolutely wonderful. I never thought I'd be taking you for a ride out on a motorbike.
I never thought you'd be taking me for a ride out.
We've got so many down people who think, oh, it's terrible, but it isn't. Things are going to get better. They really are.
So what is Captain Sir Tom going to do next?
Well, he's writing his memoirs, taking it very seriously. And then he wants to fix his hip so that he can get back on the mower.
Hannah smiles and nods.
It's been a very interesting 12 weeks and today's been an exceptionally good day. I mean, it really has.
And is there any sign he'll now put his feet up? Of course not.